Good afternoon. Welcome. It's good to see all members of the both Education Finance Committee and the Innovation Policy Committee here with us today, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this important joint hearing today. I think we got our technical issues resolved. Good, very good. So PowerPoints and that are operational. So with that, I just wanted to, a couple of things, just a little housekeeping thing, and if you all will indulge me, a personal announcement. I'm very pleased today, Jake, if you would stand up. I have a senior from Eden Prairie High School, Jake Liebold, who is job shadowing me today. And so he's been following me around today at various meetings, and I said, if you want to come while we're not in session today, we have a hearing, actually, so something going on at the Capitol or the state office building. So he's a great young man. So thanks for being here, Jay. And so with that, what I wanted to announce is that, you know, we've got probably, what, six or eight people on the list, or maybe a few more that have asked to testify. If anyone else wishes to testify, you know, just let us know. You can either raise your hand or pass us a note. So, and if anyone has any time constraints, if you need to leave before we're planning to end at 3 o'clock, let me know. But I think we will lead off with our testifiers from the Board of Teaching. And I would ask the committee members if we could get through the testimony, all of the testimony first before we go to questions, just to allow everybody who's come here today to offer their comments, and then we'll go to questions. So. And we'll just follow regular committee procedure. So with that, I would like to make just a couple of brief comments about why we're here today and the purpose of the hearing, and then I will recognize Representative Erickson, chair of the Policy Committee, if she wishes to make any comments, and then we will go to testifiers. All right. Any questions from committee members? All right. All right. Well, again, welcome. And, you know, the reason we're here today is because going back to 2011, one of the first bills signed by Governor Dayton at that time pertaining to education included a direction to the board to establish criteria and streamline procedures for teacher candidates trained in another state. And that same law also established the Alternative Teacher Preparation Program. And we've had many hearings in this committee, as other committees, Representative Erickson's and others, discussing those over the past few years. So this has been an issue that has been front and center before the legislature and a key priority before the education committees represented here today. And the issue is of paramount importance because while several schools across our state continue to report a shortage of teachers and qualified teacher candidates, and while our students reflect also changing demographics in our state, our teacher corps is still almost exclusively white. Fewer than 5% of our teachers are teachers of color. And again, we continue, particularly in the areas of special education, some math and science areas, to have significant shortages of teacher candidates. So this is a priority issue, and it has been duly noted and recognized, I think, bipartisanly and universally by, again, members on this committee, the commissioner, and others within the state. But despite that, over the past 4 years, we have seen what I believe to be a lack of urgency and action by the board to address this issue. And it is disappointing and concerning. So with that, again, noting that this conversation started in 2011, in June, when the legislature passed our budget bill for the Department of Education and our education funding, part of that legislation directed the board to act. Since it appeared that giving the discretion to the board to establish criteria did not seem to be clear, we made a very clear directive to the board that we wanted rules, and we established a deadline of January 1st, 2016 to adopt those new rules. So today we're here to find out where we are in that process, with that deadline having been established, what actions the board has taken, and the path that they see forward as we continue to tackle the issue of transparency, and an expeditious and understandable process with regards to licensure for teachers who are trained in other states and also those alternatively prepared teachers. So with that, I would recognize Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Loon. And I guess I'd like to speak today not only as a policymaker but as a former board member of the Board of Teaching serving in the 90s, that I really encourage, I see Mr. Barnhill in the audience, and of course our chair, Mr. Bellingham, notwithstanding our executive director, to develop relationships with legislators. When I served in the 90s, one of the most important things that we did on the day that we met was also visit the Hill, and we made those appointments ahead of time. Judy Wayne was our executive director then, and she always made sure that those serving on the legislative committee were always present on that day to take time to visit with legislators so that we had this relationship that developed and we could focus on timeliness, we could focus on following the law, and we could introduce the policies that we thought were important to bring forward to the legislature. So that's my comment today, and I hope that we can have a good working relationship in the future and that the laws will be upheld and that rulemaking will be done timely as it is called for in law, and that we develop a better relationship with board members and with Ms. Stone. Thank you.
All right, so we will begin with our testifiers, and so Mr. Bellingham and Ms. Stone, both from the Board of Teaching, welcome. And I don't know which one of you wants to lead off, but the microphone is yours, and we look forward to your comments.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Loon. Good afternoon. I'm John Bellingham, and I'm the chair of the Board of Teaching, and would like to give you this information on behalf of our board members. As you well know, the board is a professional standards board for the state. Our purpose is to establish policies and requirements for the preparation and certification of educational professionals, ensuring that they are competent in the professional knowledge and practice for which they are certified. They have a foundation of skills, knowledge, and attitudes necessary to help students with diverse needs, abilities, cultural experiences, and learning styles, and are committed to research-based practice and career-long professional development. The Board of Teaching serves several roles in Minnesota's education system. One of them is the policymaker. We regulate policymaking and oversight of Minnesota's system of educator preparation and continuing education. We oversee the operation of legislative mandated initiatives. Some of the many duties encompassed by the board, we have oversight of the 31 teacher preparation programs with close to 800 individual programs. We review disciplinary action on over 200 cases per year, including revocation and suspension of license. We are in a role of implementation of the state teacher exam policies, and we also review permission applications and issuance of them with over 1,000 special permissions already this year. We are an advocate for mission-related policy, programs, and resources for students and educators. One of the roles we are working on and would like to continue to develop is as an advisor. Strategic advice and guidance to the governor, the legislature, and the commissioner on the full range of issues affecting certified educators. The roles encompass both existing educator workforce and prospective pre-service educators. We will continue with action and engage in policymaking discussions that have resulted in the updates that we all will hear today. The board is eager to engage in discussion to ensure that there is parity of expectation for all teachers in Minnesota to ensure that all students have equal access to high-quality instruction. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Doan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Erin Doan, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and I will share with you today some of the updates and changes that have taken place since we spoke about this topic last session. I just want to review very briefly some of the changes just to refresh our memories of what the changes were that took place after a whole lot of conversation. In Minnesota Statute 122A09, there was a change to testing language that moved to a board-adopted skills exam to meet the requirement for a skills exam in reading, writing, and math. While primarily a language change at that point, you'll find out later on in my comments that there have been actions taken based on that language change. Also in 122A09 was a provision for candidate accommodations to be provided during teacher licensure testing and the ability for the Board of Teaching to issue up to 4 limited licenses to allow candidates to have extra time to attempt exams. Secondly, under 122A18, the ability for the board to grant limited licensure beyond that 4 years if candidates continued to struggle with the basic skills exam or skills exam was granted within that provision. And then also the creation of a provisional license. While there has been a term provisional license in statute before, the definition or the idea behind the terminology within the legislation is a bit different at this point. So the creation of a provisional license was to be issued to any licensed teacher to teach outside of their licensure field or to address a shortage area. This was also added to the statute for candidates trained in other states. Also, a big part of our conversation was the licensure via portfolio process. Licensure via portfolio applications were suspended. And then the process was discontinued for a time. At this point, that process has re-engaged. The licensure via portfolio applications now read within statute to be submitted to educator licensing at the Minnesota Department of Education. The change to statute also now indicates that the board is to notify candidates of their determination within 90 days of the submission of a licensed portfolio. The board must then advise candidates on how to successfully revise the portfolio to demonstrate required competencies. And then finally, the language dictates that educator licensing must approve or deny a portfolio within 60 days of resubmission. The implementation of this language is right now in the hands of educator licensing at the Minnesota Department of Education, and certainly we can answer questions on that component a little later on. Finally, the majority of changes happened within Statute 122A.23 for applicants trained in other states. Again, as Madam Chair has already referenced, there was a request for criteria and streamlined procedures to be now established by January 1st of 2016. In addition, there were changes to what is required in terms of criteria for candidates who are coming with a license from another state to the state of Minnesota. The board also has been given the authority to issue a license based on experience and testing only. In addition, we bring back again the 4 years now to pass exams and to meet human relations requirements. And then finally, a request for the Board of Teaching to work with designated authorities in adjoining states to establish interstate teacher licensure agreements. So that's a brief review of all the changes that related to teacher licensing in the last session. I'd like to first focus on the testing requirements that have taken, or testing requirements and the changes that have taken place to those requirements. Within legislation in 2014, I believe, there was a change for an exemption for non-native English speakers in immersion and world language settings that they would not be required to take the skills exam. Again, in 2014, the board adopted ACT and SAT scores to provide additional options to meeting the skills exam requirement. At their October 9th meeting, the Board of Teaching adopted 3 new exams to be used as a menu of options to meet that skills exam requirement and to increase the options for teachers coming from other states to be able to meet the requirement in multiple ways. The GRE, the NES, and Praxis for those coming from other states will be added as of July 2016 to meet this requirement. Extra time for all candidates, candidate study materials, and faculty support materials for remediation were requested within the 2015 RFP, and we look forward to announcing the outcome of those requests after the first of the year. And finally, the teacher performance assessment, called the EdTPA, is now required for all candidates in Minnesota preparation programs, and Minnesota candidates may present those scores to be recognized for licensure in other states. currently the EdTPA is being used as an indicator of candidate performance within the program approval structure for the board, and certainly that tool is undergoing continued evaluation as we move forward with other states. Just a brief review of the licensure requirements previously in statute, and then to say, to give you a visual today of some of the things that have been taken out of the way for candidates who are coming from other states to the state of Minnesota. The requirement used to be that candidates would show evidence that they had completed a program that was essentially equivalent to a Minnesota program, that they had experience with teaching non-native English speaking students or training for how to do so, that they had training in teaching of scientifically based reading instruction, human relations, including history, culture, and language of Minnesota's American Indian population, and had completed tests within the areas of skills, pedagogy, and content. At the time, many candidates trained outside of Minnesota were issued up to 3 one-year licenses to allow them time to be able to work while meeting the Minnesota-specific requirements. After July 1st of this year, there are a number of things that were changed in statute that now make this a different story. For the issuance of a full professional license to a candidate who is already licensed in another state coming to Minnesota, you can see the essentially equivalent training to a Minnesota program is not something that is being assessed within educator licensing at this point. Training in scientifically based reading instruction is no longer sought and is no longer added to licenses as a renewal requirement. Training for the teaching of non-native English speaking students is also not being sought within a teacher's background and not being added as a renewal requirement. What remains at this point is the completion of the human relations requirement, which I think we've talked about at length. And then also the requirement for skills testing, pedagogy testing, and content testing. Candidates trained outside of Minnesota are able to be issued up to 4 of these one-year licenses to facilitate their employment while they're meeting the requirements in Minnesota. In order for out-of-state teacher candidates to be eligible for a Minnesota license, their teacher preparation programs must be regionally accredited if they're offered through a college or university, and most importantly, they must be state-approved by the state in which the program is offered, qualifying the applicant for a full license in the state where they were prepared. They must also be in the licensure field for which Minnesota has licenses and rules. Some states license for things that we don't license for here in Minnesota. And then finally, the biggest of changes to that is that there is not, at this time, an examination to be sure that the training of teachers coming from elsewhere is essentially equivalent in content and scope to the Minnesota license. One of the bigger changes to 122A23 that you made last session was an and to an or, which many people think is a very small thing. But this or happens to be a fairly major thing, and so what I'd like to put before you is the requirement for student teaching and field-specific methods that used to exist now appears as evidencing any one of the 3 options that are in front of you. So licensed teachers from another state are now given the option to evidence that they've completed student teaching, mentoring, or induction, that they have 2 years of experience in the subject and the grade level of licensure requested, or they could have demonstrated that they had taken field-specific methods as a part of their training. Again, they are no longer required to evidence that they have a major in the content area or that their program was essentially equivalent to a Minnesota program. I'm going to speak very briefly about licensing practices. Just a couple of items that are of note that we have worked on as a board with you in past sessions. As far as the practices that are involved in the issuance of licenses, I would leave those questions to the educator licensing staff and leadership. Candidates that can now provide recommendations for a licensure field from a state-approved program that's a 712 license in another state can provide passing MTLE exam scores and student teaching or experience to be granted their full 512 license. In the past, that would have meant being referred to a Minnesota institution to seek coursework required to add grades 5 and 6 to their license. That is no longer the case. The requirement for student teaching, again, as I said, can now be met through supervised equivalent experience residency program, district-supported mentorship, induction. There are many options for them at this point to be able to meet that requirement. This also involves, as I've just alluded to, changes to the role of Minnesota institutions. While candidates under the prior rules and statutes were referred many times to higher ed institutions for an interpretation of the deficiencies in how they are meeting Minnesota standards, that is much less likely to be the case today. Out-of-state candidates that are needing coursework, perhaps just a course or two at this point, less than 50% of a program's total requirements need not receive a recommendation from that institution to apply for licensure. They may use the information about their deficiencies that they're given by educator licensing at the department, go out and take those courses, and reapply, evidencing that they've done the work in their licensure application. Updated training regarding the advising of out-of-state candidates has also been provided to higher ed institutions with teacher preparation in Minnesota. That training happened in a large scale in February of this year, and we have continued to provide updates to them as time has gone on. The changes both in statute and coming in rule also mean changes for the Board of Teaching. During the winter of last year, a licensure committee of the board was established to review licensure appeals for those who have been denied licensure or have appealed their determination. We have an active board committee made up of board members who do review any of the denials or the determinations that have been appealed by candidates that are coming through educator licensing at the Department of Education. Candidates are now asked routinely to submit any additional information that may not have initially been provided or considered within the application process as a means of communication when they receive their licensing determination. And then per board resolution in April, a major change was made to allow middle-level licenses to be issued as a standalone for those coming in other states. To put that more simply, Minnesota never issued middle-level licenses under our rules as a standalone. Middle level had to be added to either elementary or secondary licenses. Now, if someone is coming from another state that does issue a middle level license, they are able to hold that middle level license directly in Minnesota without going back to seek coursework to expand that license. So a major category of candidates who would have been referred back to teacher preparation that is now able to move directly into the classroom. Licensure rules that are presenting barriers have been identified for very specific fields because we have recently undergone, in 2012, changes to our special education rules. Those areas are being examined first and are of utmost importance to make sure we don't have rule changes that are keeping teachers from the classroom. Those that are identified for developmental and adaptive FIED, both on behalf of candidates and on behalf of institutions, have also begun a rulemaking initiative to make those changes. I would also like to address briefly the request for interstate agreements. When we last spoke during last session, we were talking about an agreement that was in draft stages with the state of Wisconsin to recognize licenses for candidates in both states within the other state. Due to the changes in Wisconsin in their legislation and changes to legislation within other border states, that draft was unable to move forward. The state of Wisconsin, in their partnership with the Regional Comprehensive Center, has requested technical support, and we have just recently learned that that will be provided in drafting an agreement for all of the central region states. Those states, hopefully on the screen you're able to see, but this really goes beyond our border states. We're now talking about the whole central region. We brought this forward recently at a meeting of the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education, and that actually brought up the larger conversation to say we should really be revisiting the interstate licensure agreement to see if there are changes that we can make on a nationwide level. This is not a Minnesota-specific conversation. There are teacher shortages in every state in the United States right now, largely in the same areas, within special education, within math, within sciences. So we're not necessarily going to fix the problem only by addressing mobility for teachers coming from other states. So we will be in November, on November 12th, we will be having that national level conversation to find out how we can really do more to add pieces to the interstate agreement that would allow change on a national level. Finally, I'd like to address the rulemaking initiative, which is where we started our comments this afternoon. The board began conversations in earnest about changes that could be made to streamline the process for candidates who are applying after being trained in other states and in some cases licensed in other states. I think that we can provide documentation going back to 2011 to show that that conversation was taking place at the board table and that there were changes made all along the way since 2011. Concerning the rulemaking initiative, the board's conversations began directly at their July retreat of this year. Some of you were in attendance for conversations that took place regarding this issue. We were also advised early on that we needed to have a revisor's draft ready and able to be published before we put out a request for comments, which turns out to not be the case, that we could have, we're now learning, we could have actually done that request for comment in the summer, and that is the fault of really my fault, board staff, for not knowing that that was the case. We did not know that we received erroneous information. That being the case, we have a working draft, which I see has been provided for you today, that was being moved forward from July through October of this year, and that's the October 9th version that was handed out. Finally, we have a revisor's draft that is the most recent working draft of the addition to those rules that has been provided for you today. I want to also just point out a clarification. You will see the revisor's draft number, 4369, referenced in my slides. And when you look at the revisor's draft itself, there's a number that says 4370 on it. As I said, we also have another rulemaking initiative that's moving right now, and the revisor's draft numbers have been switched inadvertently on the two. So it is 4369 that we'll be working on in regard to out-of-state licensure criteria. Our goals in this rulemaking initiative are to define the criteria for the new provisional license or permission, as it ends up to be, to define a similar licensure area and or similar content field, to define criteria for professional licensure in Minnesota and the types of evidence that may be provided to demonstrate meeting the criteria. That piece was specifically called out in the legislation written for us this last year. To define what a restricted license status means and the means by which that restricted status can be moved on content and scope of a license, and to define more clearly the licensure via portfolio process and the eligibility requirements for that portfolio process. All that said, the goals have been fairly clearly stated within conversation, but again, rulemaking is not a quick process. We have been intentional about gathering stakeholders together with working with our standards and rules advisory body to make sure that we have investment in the drafts that are moving forward. During the next 60 days, prior to January 1st, we'll be meeting with the Standards and Rules Committee to, again, get their input on the rule draft that's before you today. And certainly we'll be moving ahead with as much speed and as we can, ensuring that we are following the administrative procedure for rulemaking and that we are involving candidate discussion in that process. There's just one more piece, and you're not intended to be able to read that slide that's in front of you. I just wanted to point out there is a handout that was provided today, and hopefully it's at your places, that is an overview of Minnesota teacher licensing and the permissions that are offered to be in the classroom in the state of Minnesota. Anything that you see in green is something that is processed and applied for through the Minnesota Department of Education and their Educator Licensing Division. Anything that you see under the blue heading is processed and is produced by the Board of Teaching and their staff. I know that there has been a great deal of confusion about who does what and which applications go to whom, and I know that we'll be talking about that later on as well, and definitely this has been a large topic, a large factor in the legislative audit that has been taking place since we last spoke, and definitely are willing to receive feedback on anything or questions on any of this that's before you today. You also have in front of you, to go along with this chart, a written description of all of the types of licenses that are issued by Educator Licensing, as well as all the board-issued permissions and what needs and what uses those pieces can be applied for. So, again, not for your review within the next hour or so, but for your review later on, and certainly we're welcome to receive any questions on that piece. That's all I have for our presentation today, but again, we'll open ourselves to questions after testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stone and Mr. Bellingham. We appreciate it. And as I mentioned earlier, I think we're going to hear from the other people who would like to testify today, and then we'll come back for questions. Fairly certain people will have questions for you, so please just don't go too far. Great. Thank you. All right. So I have a number of people who had indicated they wanted to testify, and I'll just go as they're listed. I have Rob Prater. Mr. Prater is superintendent with Hinckley Finlayson Public Schools. And then next, John Claver, executive director, Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. Welcome. So, Mr. Prater?
Yes, Chairman.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. All right, thank you. All right, welcome, and if you would please go ahead and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Rob Prater, Superintendent Hinckley Finlayson Schools, representing Schools for Equity in Education. Come to talk. I won't admire the problem too much. I think we all acknowledge. I'm pleased that we're leading off very much, but there's a drastic teacher shortage in the state. There are some contributing factors that I don't think the legislature can address, like an aging population and changing demographics, but I think there are things that are within your control to look at, some of them that the Board of Teaching can help address, and some of them that there may be other factors. So one of the things that I think other people will be able to testify more eloquently than I are in special ed, but I will touch on that a little bit. To note, the problem hits home in Hinckley Finlayson Schools, about 1,000 students, about 85 teachers. About 3 years ago, we could anticipate about 100 applicants for elementary teaching job. Now we can hope to get one or two for one job. And for special ed, we still have some positions open that were posted in the spring that we cannot fill. There are not enough licensed people in the states, and they are leaving for retirement, and they are leaving for private industry. So I've grouped my possible solutions into a couple areas. Again, I appreciate that the innovation is in the committee title, and it's one of the first things mentioned, because I think the ideas do need a little bit to be innovative. I think that we need to look outside of the box a little bit, and some things we even need to look at Board of Teaching and everything they do a little bit differently. Some of the licensing issues, special ed, it's a very narrow grouping of licenses, and we've started to make it even more narrow. The autism license, every district in the state is trying to catch up with that, and we are put far behind in that. A lot of our groupings in these special ed areas are just too narrow. Science is very difficult. It's at the top of the list as having a shortage, and that is a social studies teacher is licensed to teach all secondary, and in science, very narrow groupings. And we need to look at STEM and science is having a broader focus. Student teaching is another issue that comes up often. I believe that we could look at a teacher should do one student a teaching experience in a career, not multiple. To change from elementary to special ed, to change administrative categories can require student teaching again. And this can cost a candidate $3,000 to $5,000 easily, cost them time at their job. We can even look at creative ideas other states have dabbled with. Student teaching is paid internships. Student teaching is not multi-controlled by these universities, but working together in partnerships more as apprenticeship-type arrangements. Concurrent enrollment, I was here to testify a few weeks ago about the issue with the Higher Learning Commission, and one of the things that I've been talking about is we've expanded from a 1-6 license to a K-12 license to an E-12 license. I think we should start talking about an E-14 or an E-16 license to cover some of our concurrent enrollment issues that the state is acknowledging through the Board of Teaching that we have people that are ready and prepared to teach at higher learning. Also, the STEM licensure is something we really need to get involved in because the math and science are starting to get more integrated all the way down to the elementary levels, and I think we need to get creative about how we look at those. There are financial things that I think the legislature can look at doing. Incentives for districts to hire special ed math, science, these very critical shortage areas as 12-month employees because they are doing summer school. They do need to be constantly retrained year-round. They do need more interaction with students. And we know that that we know that the achievement gap just widens with special ed students, especially students in poverty and students of color, over the summer. And we need to start to look at not just ESY being a 1 or 2 week experience in the summer, but really to truly be year-round for these students, and we need to close the achievement gap. And we need to incentivize that with the teachers. I believe, and I didn't do my homework well enough, but I believe that the governor's proposal last legislative session was for immediate loan forgiveness in some of these shortage areas, and I think we need to come back to that. I know that there are a lot of ways that we can find teachers in shortage areas to get some loan forgiveness eventually, and the federal government does a job of that, but I think the state needs to step up, because we are competing with other states, and if we can incentivize to get people into these areas. Special ed cohorts through MRA, MNSU. And then the last one is kind of the double dipping issue. I know we've had this issue about TRA. Teachers can retire, collect their TRA, and then the districts and the teachers don't have to pay into it. And I must have struggled with that philosophically. But practically right now, we're going to need to rehire some of our retirees. In my district, until 3 years ago, I had never rehired a retired teacher. You hear about it a lot. I had never done it. Now we have four, because there are nobody else out there to do it. And I don't want to disincentivize those teachers that are experienced, that aren't just throwing bodies into the classroom when we're in a teacher shortage. Minnesota State Retirement System has a new ACA ruling where retirees cannot access their health care accounts. Many districts pay that severance to teachers, and then the teachers are disincentivized to come back and reteach because then they can't access that. So I think anything we can do to incentivize those experienced people to come back and teach again after retirement. So I believe that's all. Sorry if that was a little overwhelming, but I'm trying to provide some possible solutions.
No, thank you, Mr. Prater. That was really an excellent list of suggestions, and we do appreciate that. I think much more than just admiration of the problem, as you identified in your opening comments. Mr. Klaber, am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes, you are.
All right. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is John Klaber. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, or MACE. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today and specifically bring you up today in the true nitty-gritty nature of what's happening in terms of special education and meeting the employment issues that we are facing. I'll give you an idea of where things are right now. I'll give you an idea of what we are trying to do as administrators across the state to address those issues, and I'll give you some possible suggestions of possible fixes. A few short years ago, I would have provided you two different, dramatically different scenarios about what's happening in hiring and employing folks to work in special education. I would have given you the view of what's happening in greater Minnesota, and I would have given you a different view in the metro area. That's no longer the case. The metro school districts are now experiencing challenges with filling positions. They're following the same trajectory as what was experienced in greater Minnesota. First, districts and cooperatives find it challenging or impossible to employ specialists within special education. School psychologists, speech and language pathologists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, teachers of the hearing impaired or blind or visually impaired. Then it moves to the challenges with employing licensed staff to work with kids with challenging behaviors, significant intellectual deficits, and young children with disabilities. Finally, the district can't find licensed staff to work with students with mild to moderate disabilities. We are at that level very clearly in greater Minnesota, and the metro is approaching that level very rapidly. So what are we doing to address the shortfall? Well, we could talk to you about paperwork. We could talk, and we have in the past. And paperwork and the percentage of the day in which our educators are spending on paperwork contributes to their retiring early and choosing not to go into the profession. So anything that we can do to have people who are trained to educate kids with disabilities spend their time educating kids with disabilities versus spending their time working with paperwork will increase the pool, and it will result in people staying in the profession. We've also hired paraprofessionals. Oh my, we have hired paraprofessionals all over the place. And many of our districts are still finding that they can't fill those positions. And our teachers weren't really trained or didn't go into this field in order to supervise paraprofessionals. We've collaborated with colleges and universities to put into place grow your own programs. Typically, paraprofessionals with college degrees are supported in their return to college to obtain the special ed teaching license. We've encouraged and financially supported licensed special educators to take additional coursework leading to licenses that allow them to serve students with specialized needs, such as orientation and mobility, physically impaired, work transition. We've increased our participation in job fairs. Now we're going to other states and attending their job fairs. We used to joke about the fact that Texas used to come to Minnesota in order to look for teachers. Well, the shoe's on the other foot now. We've made recruiting visits to college and universities in Minnesota, and now we're extending those to surrounding states. Some districts have contracts that allow them to place teachers at an elevated level on the contract. We've done that. We've been paying signing bonuses. We've stolen from each other. Almost any superintendent in the state can talk to you about that great teacher that somebody stole away from them because they could sweeten the pot and make it better. We have also employed individuals who have not been successful elsewhere in the hope, the belief that somehow we can do what other districts fail to do, supporting them to a level of competency. We are now working with national staffing firms, headhunters. And they, in the past, would come in and identify for us folks as school psychologists, speech and language pathologists, OTs, PTs. Now they're including licensed teachers. We've employed interns when fully licensed practitioners are not available. We've made the teacher license variance the new standard of employment. In one of the larger outstate districts, three-fourths of the teachers hired this fall were done through the variance process. Keep in mind, the upshot is that a licensed teacher with no formal disability training is delivering specialized services and instructions to our students with disabilities. No SPED license, no problem. If you have a teacher license and you're willing to work with kids with disabilities, we'll figure out a way to get you a variance and spend additional funds trying to support you. We've now discovered the community expert license. No teacher license of any kind. Got a four-year college degree in a related area, we hope, no problem, we'll hire you as a community expert. We're that desperate. So what's contributing to the problems? I won't talk about the general overall issues with education and finding folks to be able to work in the field. Let's talk specifically what's happening in Minnesota. We've somehow determined that a special education teacher candidate, because they hold a K-12 license, must have reading, writing, and math skills required of the same teacher candidate delivering AP math or English. I'm not aware that anyone has determined that such a level of skill results in improved services to second graders or seniors with disabilities. Somehow, we've determined that attaining a four-year college degree is not enough evidence that you can read, write, and do math if you want to become a teacher. But it is enough if you want to go to med school, become a lawyer, or a college professor. We have no clear-cut teacher licensure reciprocity with other states. We've directed the Board of Teaching to put such a process in place by January 1, 2016. As we heard, there are some concerns with the other states accepting our license. My response, our organization's response, is we shouldn't care. There should be no reason why teacher licenses offered in adjoining states don't automatically assure licensure in Minnesota. I suppose you could make the case that social studies teachers or history teachers have a course in Minnesota history. The new academic and behavioral strategist ABS license creates multiple challenges for teachers and by extension our school districts. It is the perfect example of unintended consequence. It's a short-term license that cannot be renewed as such. The teacher must return to college to take multiple courses approaching what is required for a master's degree without the thesis. At that time, the teacher is no longer licensed in multiple areas. The district, as a result, has no control over which licensure area the teacher pursues, regardless of what our need might be, and the teacher is, in most cases, already tenured. One can see an obvious benefit to colleges and universities to deliver this undergraduate degree license. On the face of it, it addresses concerns expressed by our organization and others that we need special education generalists as much as specialists. By contrast, this process only works for 5 years. It also assures the institutions of higher learning a pool of candidates who will not yet have paid off their undergraduate school loans, but now must take on additional debt in order to keep their jobs. Something not required of any other teacher licensed in the state of Minnesota. In fact, The degree has become so popular that few institutions of higher learning are offering undergraduate licensure programs in other disability areas. You will not find undergrad programs in emotional behavior disorders, learning disabilities, developmental cognitive disabilities. There's not a single college, university in the state that offers an undergraduate degree in early childhood special education. And in looking online today, that's the same for autism spectrum disorder. So the college student who is willing to take on the challenge of working with students with significant intellectual limitations or significant behavioral challenges or young children and infants with disabilities has no route to do so. And the districts have fewer candidates and only those with more costly advanced degrees. The state lacks programs for blind and visually impaired. At one time, the U of M offered the program. Now some districts and MDE are attempting to engage training from out of state from a very, very expensive private college near Philadelphia and only at the graduate study level. By contrast, the University of North Dakota has such a program that meets licensure requirements in North Dakota, and somehow those candidates cannot be considered by Minnesota school districts. Administrators report to me that they've struggled to find out what additional coursework might be necessary for these North Dakota grads to be licensed in Minnesota. State universities have dropped other programs. For example, training licensure as a special education work transition coordinator. At one time, Bemidji State offered the program. The University of Minnesota had the program. Now only Bethel and the U of M offer the training, and only Bethel allows for distance learning for individuals living outside the metro area. Keep in mind, these are licenses required by the Board of Teaching. A district that fails to employ such individuals may be found in noncompliance of state and federal laws designed to assure that students with disabilities receive a free and appropriate public education. So, what can we do? One, let's determine that teacher licensure from adjoining states meet our licensure standards. Few, if any, additional requirements should be placed on those individuals. Let's bring back our Minnesota students who have taken advantage of the college reciprocity agreements to attend school outside of borders, and let's bring them back as trained teachers. Two, let's require that the higher ed system has at least one program, just one, in the state for any required area of licensure. That program can be offered at an undergraduate level unless a compelling case can be made to make it a postgraduate only. That online coursework is offered to residents of Greater Minnesota. There should be no repeat of the current fiasco surrounding licensure for blind, visually impaired teachers. Additionally, there should be an expectation that licensure programs and ECSE, EBD, DCD, others be delivered by a college and universities across the state. Finally, the ABS licensure should be standalone undergraduate degree leading to licensure, not requiring expensive postgraduate work to keep your job, and after 5 years, changing the very nature of your license. This will address the need for individuals with broad-based training to work with students with less disabling conditions. This will also serve as an incentive to colleges and universities to reinstate or maintain other undergraduate special education programs rather than eyeing those postgraduate dollars. It will serve to encourage individuals to go into the profession, to follow their passions, work with kids with disabilities. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I'll stick around in case people have any specific questions.
Thank you, Mr. Claver. We appreciate your thoughtful comments. All right, so next I have Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And after Ms. Dietrich, I have Rydid Watkins and Nathan Sellers, both attorneys. And so, and just as a reminder, you all are presenting excellent testimony, but we do need to get through about six more testifiers, and I want to have enough time for committee questions. So if you could keep your comments as brief as possible. Ms. Dietrich. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the Chair mentioned, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to respond to the potential amendments to the rules on teacher licenses in response to the 2015 legislative changes that were made. MSBA has conducted meetings with school board members across the state, with superintendents, legislators in attendance as well. And many of you actually were in attendance, and we appreciate that. But as we went through these meetings and we summarized the 2015 actions, We were anxious to point out that the legislature took some big steps forward in the area of teacher licensure. And this issue, teacher licensure, as we spoke about it, continued to be at the top of school board members' top concerns. School board members during these meetings affirmed their needs. They need flexibility in the hiring and retaining of high-quality teachers. They would like the legislature and the Board of Teaching to remove the barriers that prevent boards, school boards, from hiring high-quality teachers. They would like to simplify and streamline the process to employ highly qualified teachers, out-of-state licensed teachers, so that they can increase the diversity in their teaching force that better reflects the student population. And in summary, they are just asking the legislature to find a solution to this teaching shortage that they are experiencing, while acknowledging that it is not going to be simple and that there will need to be short-term solutions as well as long-term solutions. Due to this sense of urgency from our school districts, we have sincerely anticipated the new rules that were presented here today. And we sincerely hoped that they would reflect the changes that our school board members have identified, and that they would also support the steps that the legislature took in 2015 legislative session. And so what we have done is we have done our best to evaluate these proposed draft rules, and we see some of those rules as a step forward, and we see some of them as a step backward in regards to what was passed at the legislative session. Now, I need to add this disclaimer that I am not an expert in teacher licensure, and I admit that there is a complexity to this issue like no other. There, and with all the different moving pieces, it is very difficult to get the full picture of what is really happening in the state. And I also want to have the disclaimer that my comments today are reflective of the rules that we were presented today. Ms. Stone has talked about potential rules in the future, and I don't have access to those. So, first of all, we want to thank the Board of Teaching for their work and their sincere effort to respond to the legislative session requirements. The fact that the Board of Teaching is now considering these rules and that they have drafted these potential amendments, that is one step forward, and this is the first step. Another step forward as the result of the 2015 session, which is now current law, requires the Board of Teaching to allow up to 4 temporary 1-year teacher licenses to qualified teachers who have not successfully passed all the exams. And if you look at the potential rules, the draft amendments, they seem to rewrite the current law, and they limit the initial professional license to a 1-year license. The limited license is now limited to 3 years, and the special permission variance is limited to 3 renewals. This is a step backwards for removing barriers to hiring teachers that have proven their abilities in the classrooms. Another step forward from the last session was the restrictive license provision, that is to be issued at the request of the school district or charter school to an otherwise qualified teacher candidate who has not yet demonstrated a passing score on the board adopted skills exams. These rules that you have in front of you, they seem to be a step backwards in the authority that was intended for the school board or the school district to hire the teachers who have demonstrated that they are performed in the classroom. So, as I mentioned before, Ms. Stone has already talked about the fact, though, that they are going to work more on this restricted license. So we hope that they will truly honor the intent of the law. Another step forward last session was the effort to help school districts address the teacher shortage by granting a 2-year provisional license, a variance, and a non-licensed community expert in the area of teacher shortage areas, as defined by the Department of Education. The Board of Teaching amended rule requires that license that the position is posted for at least 30 days on the state-approved job posting site, and that no individual licensed in this field, licensed person in this field, has applied. If I have interpreted that correctly, it means that if we have one licensed applicant that applies for that position, they must be hired or the position must be left vacant, since the provisional license cannot be utilized under those conditions. The proposed rule that you have in front of you also removes the definition of teacher shortage in statute. We feel like that is a step backwards. One step forward in the potential rules is that they, in the system, in the process of master teacher licensure, they actually use the system of the teacher evaluation system to actually allow a teacher to get the master teacher license. We would encourage the Board of Teaching to use the teacher evaluation system in more of these instances besides just this one. And then in the area of out-of-state licensure, there were several provisions passed in 2015 that were considered a step forward, and that they would simplify and streamline the processes in order for a out-of-state teacher to acquire a Minnesota license. One of those that I would like to comment on, and Ms. Stone actually commented on it as well, is the similar content field words in rules versus the same. And we see that what the potential amendments that you have in front of you is silent on that issue, and so that we are hoping that the Board of Teaching addresses that and develops rules around the words similar and the same, and that once again that they will take to heart the intent of the 2015 legislature. Lastly, I would like to just reaffirm or say that something very positive out of the 2015 legislature was the reaffirmation of the portfolio process. That was a step forward, and we were disappointed to see in the potential amendments that the timelines of 90-60 day timelines for feedback were eliminated in this rule. And once again, Ms. Stone has talked about the fact that addressing that. So we hope that the legislature intent will be included in those rules. And finally, we want to thank the Board of Teaching for taking one big step forward by passing a resolution that would add to the number of board-approved skills tests that would qualify a teacher for licensure. What we would like to encourage the Board of Teaching to do, though, is to also allow the praxis to qualify for a Minnesota teacher as well. Allowing the teachers licensed in another state the ability to take the praxis while not the teachers in Minnesota creates a two-tiered system, and we think that that is a dangerous path to go down. So what we have looked at the rules, and we have said, do these rules do they promote helping us in the state of Minnesota to reduce our teacher shortage? Do we have more flexibility in hiring? Are the barriers being reduced? Are we able to recruit and attract more state teachers that reflect our student demographics? And do they simplify the teacher licensure process? And finally, are the rules more streamlined? I hope that you can see from my testimony that we think that it is kind of a mixed bag. There were some very positive steps moving forward, but there are also some of the provisions that bring us backwards in the state. With that, Madam Chair, I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. And again, if you would just hang around, we'll come to questions once all the testifiers have finished.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. And then, again, I mentioned Radid Watkins, Nathan Sellers, and if your clients want to come with you.
I think we'll bring them down in just a couple of minutes.
Okay. All right. Whichever order you want to testify is fine.
As a British national, I'm very impressed. You've all been here for over an hour now without insulting anyone, though slightly disappointed.
Committee's not over yet, but thank you for your encouragement.
I am, actually, and that's actually why I've come. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us. This is an exceptionally important issue. My name is Reefid Watkins. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Fagree, Baker & Daniels. My firm has recently dedicated a substantial amount of resources to addressing what we consider to be an absolutely disgusting and inexcusable blight on this great state that we share, which is all of the astonishing educational achievement gaps that we see in this state. And what our firm did was we collectively met with tons of stakeholders. We met with school district superintendents. We met with nonprofit organization leaders. We met with student activists. We met with all types of organizations, not only locally, but nationally. And we talked to these people and we said, looking at Minnesota, how is it possible that there's such an incredible disparate effect of education? Why do we have so many highly educated students and so many very poorly educated students? How have we in Minnesota managed to achieve the largest education gaps of almost anywhere in the country? That's astonishing. From an immigrant, for someone who sort of studied the Mason-Dixon line, the racism and the segregations of the South, to have overcome Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Georgia is incredible to me. And it's disappointing to be from the largest law firm in the state to look at this issue and say, we have to address this. So in all of our meetings, in all of our discussions, we were led to one inescapable conclusion. One of the largest problems we had was education. The state of Minnesota does not have the diversity in its education ranks and the number of educators it needs to effectively close the gaps. I have heard from superintendents repeatedly saying, we are forced to hire people that we all agree are unqualified because we can't get qualified people. I'm here to tell you I represent a number of highly qualified teachers who teach in high shortage areas who cannot get licensed through the board despite objectively satisfying all of the legal requirements for licensure. I'm not going to bore you with details, but I will mention that I represent two teachers with 4 decades of experience teaching in special education, in writing course plans, lesson plans, and so on, being heads of special education districts, of not only teaching full-time in special education, but spending all of their free time working with wounded veterans who have mental disabilities. And these teachers with over 4 decades of experience who have a proven track record of success cannot get licensed in Minnesota. For every one step forward the legislature takes, the Board of Teaching takes 2 to 3 steps back. I'm here to tell you that we have researched the law, we have litigated the law, and unfortunately the Board of Teaching consistently refuses to apply or follow the law. It has gotten to a point where it's just simply unpalatable. We initially began, we started representing individual teachers, and we would appeal their decisions either through discussions or through what's called the administrative appeal process. We represented in the proximity of 20-odd teachers, and we've won every single case without fail, without exception. That is to say, the Board of Teaching has consistently reversed its position after denying each and every one of my clients a license. Without any reason or excuse or any kind of proof of any kind, it simply reversed its position and then all of a sudden issued licenses to my clients. And many times I have had clients who've been applying for over a decade, over 10 years of consistently going to the Board of Teaching and saying, I would like a license, can you help me? Board of Teaching refused, licenses were not issued, we got involved, and in some cases we've been able to get the decisions overturned in a matter of days. We are currently in the middle of a lawsuit, which Mr. Sellers will tell you about a little bit more, but I want to just sort of finish up by talking about a couple of key points. In 2011, as you all know, the licensure laws were passed. The Board of Teaching was required to create streamlined procedures to help out-of-state teachers. I can tell you, as I sit here having litigated for 3 years in these issues, I have not found one. I have not found one single streamlined procedure that actually helps out-of-state teachers get licensed here. Again, I represent people. We're not talking about lowering the requirements for licensure. We're not talking about making it easier for teachers to get licensed. We're talking about making the process fair, clear, transparent, a process that we can understand. As a litigator, as a professional in litigating and fighting these issues, I cannot figure out how the Board of Teaching makes decisions. I've represented, for example, 2 married individuals who were both treated so radically different despite having the same education, going to the same schools, teaching in the same schools. One gets a license, one is told, sorry, you're not going to get a license. Why? I don't know. I've litigated that. I've deposed Ms. Doan about that. I couldn't tell you why. One issue I have is licensure via portfolio. Now, you guys all know that was created into law, passed into law in 2012 or 11. Ms. Doan came here and lobbied and requested that the legislature enact law 122A.21, requesting specifically that the law be written allowing for licensure via portfolio. They accepted over 700 licensure via portfolio applications and granted 90% of them. I represent so many people who would benefit phenomenally from that program. Yet, it was discontinued. Why was it discontinued? We have done DPA requests. We have done discovery requests. We have done depositions. There has not been one answer to our question as to why, despite the law requiring the Board of Teaching to accept licensure via portfolio, the Board has steadfastly refused to accept a single application since 2012. That's disgusting. That's not the law. That's unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. I have, for example, a client who has 30 years of teaching experience for music, 20 years here in Minnesota. He has a master's degree in music. Mr. Munsterman cannot get licensed to teach music. Do you know why? If you do, tell me, because I can't figure it out. It's absolutely disgusting. These teachers are going, students are going without teachers. I've got so many special education teachers I could help you with. So many who would be more than willing to come in and teach in outstate Minnesota, but they can't get licensed. It's disgusting. Licensure via portfolio, we've actually sued about. We've brought a lawsuit in the District Court of Minnesota, of St. Paul here, alleging that the Board of Teaching has absolutely violated our teachers' rights to licensure via portfolio. That's unobjectively true, in my opinion. What was the Board of Teaching's response? They said to us in court, their response was, we have absolutely no obligation to do licensure via portfolio. As the Board of Teaching, despite the fact the law was passed, despite the fact the law was amended in 2015, the Board of Teaching's lawyers and the Board of Teaching itself represented to the court it had every right to ignore the law, to not accept any licenses or any applications whatsoever through licensure via portfolio, because it had written a rule. It had written a rule. It's a little escape hatch that they wrote. It's a rule written by the Board of Teaching for the Board of Teaching that says, get out of the law, free card. If I could buy one of those for any of my clients, I assure you I would, but it doesn't exist. You cannot ignore the law, particularly if you're the government. That's where people's faith falls down. That's where we have to get involved. It's incredibly unfortunate, and it's unfair. Ms. Dolan made comments here in her opening statement that licensure via portfolio was being reinstated. False. It has not. We were in court recently, and her attorneys represented to the judge, licensure via portfolio is not operational. It is not up and running. They will not accept applications for people for licensure via portfolio. They have represented they will open the process again, now that they're being sued over it, now the law's been even clearer than before, but they maintain their position. They will not withdraw their position from court that they forever hold the right to change their mind and ignore the law at their whim. That is not the law, that is not how it was written, that is not fair, that is not fortunate. A couple of other minor points I want to raise, because I can see I've gone well over my time. There are several laws, including the right to appeal an administrative decision. If you look at our complaint, we have attached emails that are the most degrading and sexist responses I've seen in my career, basically telling people, you can't appeal these decisions because we have lawyers from the AG's office, we will make this incredibly cumbersome, difficult, and expensive for you, and we will crush you. That is an astonishing way to speak to a teacher who makes little money to begin with. And I can tell you that's not the case. Again, we've won 20 cases in a row and haven't lost one. And I don't know, that kind of win record's astonishing. It's got to stop. Additionally, I just wanted to mention very quickly, Ms. Dolan mentioned there were new rules being processed that's been going on since July. I think she said the conversation, I didn't follow entirely, so I apologize if I'm misrepresenting, but something about the conversation's been happening since 2011, and the rules are really now, the conversation's beginning in earnest now. That's not what they've represented in court. I'm here to tell you that in court, their lawyer represented on three separate occasions with the judge and the media that eventually, as soon as the draft rules were available, as soon as it was worth circulating, they had our, we, the court, us, my clients, had the assurance of the Board of Teaching that they would provide us a copy of those rules so we could discuss a possible settlement of our lawsuit. We were never provided a copy of those rules. We were aware they'd been circulated to a number of people. When we asked, the response from the attorney was, they're not really worth sharing yet because we haven't done anything with them yet. Just so you know, the representations made through the lawyers to the, as an officer of the court, to the judge herself, are vastly different from what we're hearing today. I have about 700 hours more that I could talk about, but with that, I will pass the comments to my colleague, Mr. Sellers.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. And Mr. Sellers, if you please just introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Reithed. Reithed likes to talk a lot because he makes a lot more per hour than I do, so I'll try to be as brief as possible. My name is Nathan Sellers. I am an attorney at the Minneapolis law firm of Fabianski, Westra, Hart, and Thompson. As Mr. Watkins mentioned, we represent 20 individual teachers who have been denied or expect to be denied a standard teaching license in Minnesota. In April 2015, we initiated a lawsuit in Ramsey County District Court seeking injunctive relief and declaratory relief. The case is styled Hernandez versus Board of Teaching. I will briefly cover the major issues in that lawsuit. The plaintiffs are challenging the board on four grounds. The first, as Mr. Watkins mentioned, is the board's unilateral decision to discontinue the licensure via portfolio process that is provided for as a mandatory route to licensure in Minnesota Statute 122A.21. To date, we have no present understanding of what this supposed new process will look like, and I can confirm that the board's attorney has represented to the court, yes, they don't have any responsibility to actually have a licensure via portfolio process. No, they don't know when that process will actually be operational again. The board's attorney promised us repeatedly this summer during settlement negotiations that we would receive a preview of rules for the new process. We have yet to see one. The second grounds for the lawsuit is the board's refusal to adopt streamlined procedures in accordance with Minnesota Statutes 122.23 Subdivision 1. As we were all aware, in 2011, the legislature passed amendments that were intended to improve academic excellence and close the achievement gap. One of those was a requirement that the board establish streamlined procedures to recognize the experience and professional credentials of out-of-state teachers. In a deposition under oath in a prior matter less than a year ago, the representative for the Board of Teaching, Ms. Doan, testified that the board has never publicized nor memorialized a single streamlined procedure for out-of-state applicants and has never applied any such procedure to a single applicant, and we're going on 5 years since that law was passed. The third ground that the plaintiffs are suing the board on is that the board has essentially ignored Minnesota Statute 128.23 Subdivision 2. That subdivision provides that teachers licensed in another state are entitled to reciprocity under certain circumstances, the most important of which is that they have either A, completed field-specific training and completed student teaching, or they have essentially equivalent experience. Now, as I understand and we all understand, that language has been changed with the July 2015 amendments. I do want to correct something that Ms. Doan said, however. There was no change in the statute from the word and to the word or. The word or always existed. The intent of the statute was always that out-of-state teacher could gain licensure by demonstrating field-specific training and student teaching, or that they have essentially equivalent experience. The Board of Teaching refused to ever interpret the statute according to its plain language, and they required out-of-state teachers consistently to demonstrate that their teacher preparation program was essentially equivalent to a Minnesota program, which involved a course-by-course comparison of transcripts, even though that's nowhere in the language of .23 Subdivision 2. Fourth, plaintiffs are challenging the board on its treatment of applicants for licensure in an arbitrary and capricious fashion, and its refusal to articulate standards that it applies when reviewing applications. In the experience of Mr. Watkins and myself representing teachers prior to this litigation, the board has not treated similarly situated applicants similarly. The board often denies some of the most qualified applicants while granting license to less qualified applicants. And as Mr. Watkins mentioned, not only has the board systematic view of its decisions by discouraging applicants from appealing. At one point, the board wrote a letter to an applicant telling them incorrectly that there was no right to administrative appeal, even though such a right exists. A copy of that letter is also attached to our complaint. I will mention during settlement discussions that occurred during the summer and into this fall, which eventually broke apart as progress was unable to be made, there was no indication made to us that rules passed by the board will meet the January 1, 2016 deadline in the statute. In fact, it was never indicated that the board was even striving to meet that goal. All the while our plaintiffs, as you will hear in a minute, continue to spend thousands of dollars taking coursework at colleges and universities because the board has told them to do so, even though they don't actually need that additional coursework under the plain language of statutes.
And in closing, we'll just say our lawsuit is based entirely on a request for a fair, transparent, and clear process. We believe many of these rules and laws have already been written. They just need to be administered as accordance to their writing. So far more persuasively than us, we have brought two of our clients who have graciously agreed to testify. We have Ms. Cynthia Kane and Ms. Kirsten Rogers who will testify. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins and Mr. Sellers. All right, if Cynthia Kane and Kirsten Rogers would come up, and then also Daniel Sellers, I have you on the list as well. If anyone else wishes to testify, if you'd maybe make your way down to these chairs behind them. And we'll try to wrap up testimony here as close to 2:30 as we can, although we may go a little over. I don't want to unnecessarily cut people off, but I do know that committee members are going to have questions. So welcome to the committee, and just please state your name and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cynthia Kane, and I am just a high school teacher, so I'm going to pretend that you're all my high school students so I don't feel so nervous. But I taught high school in Anchorage, Alaska for 9 years. I had completed a health, outdoor, and physical education program there. After teaching high school for 9 years, I moved back here to Minnesota where my family was and was granted a license in physical education, and I, at that time, thought that's what I needed to teach here. My second year substitute teaching, I hadn't found a job yet. I realized that I was not licensed in health in Anchorage. Physical education teachers are umbrellaed, so I taught health there for 9 years. And here I was not licensed to teach health, so I started pursuing what I needed to do that. I was told, just in phone conversations and in hindsight, it was probably mostly with secretaries, that I was not qualified for a Minnesota license and that I was not qualified to take the MTLE, and I needed to contact a Minnesota State University to figure out what I needed to do to gain my licensure in health education, which is really what I wanted to teach. So I did contact multiple universities, a few of them. Most of them had undergraduate degrees, which being kind of old at the time. And being a mom, I can't do Monday through Friday school during the day like a typical student in a bachelor's program would be doing. So that was very unrealistic for me. And the University of Minnesota did have a licensure program that I finally joined this year. I have been teaching in Anoka-Hennepin, subbing for 5 years, and now I've been teaching on a variance, actually, for health education for 3 years. During that time, I, of course, like some of the people before me had mentioned, I've been laid off at the end of every year because I'm on a variance and not licensed to teach in my field, and not sure even this year, 2 days before school started, before I knew I would be able to have my half-time position back. The classes that I'm taking currently at the University of Minnesota is part of a health licensure program that seemed at the time like my only resort to continue teaching health education. The summer classes that I took this session, I took 5 credits this summer, and I'm currently in 6 credits right now. The one class that I'm taking, Methods of Teaching Health Education, is listed on my current college transcript from Alaska as Methods of Teaching Health Education. The textbook, one of the textbooks we're using, has it's the same version I used in my methods class, except it's like 7 editions later. So it's a black cover with an apple instead of a white cover with an apple. I did buy the updated version for, I think it was $173. And then the other textbook that we're using in the methods class is actually the Glencoe Health textbook that I currently teach out of in my district. So I'm weekly doing chapter reviews on the material that I'm teaching to my students. So as you can see, it's kind of I'm very, the professor commented that I'm very good at breaking down the information because I've been teaching it now for about 12 years. But I am about $8,000 into that program. I was lucky enough to meet with Ms. Doan last week, and after a discussion that we had, she agreed, looking at my transcript herself, that I should have been qualified to take the MTLE 7 years ago when I started this whole thing. And once I brought my MTLE scores forward, that if I passed that competency test in my curriculum, that I would be able to be granted a health license. Now, talking back to the university, as to, I'm a third of the way into a master's program, and as you know, with special education would have been my second choice for doing a master's program, but $8,000 in, I hate to throw in the towel and still not have a master's at the end of the beginning of my 2 years here, so I still actually haven't made a decision what I'm doing. I am only teaching half-time. I've missed a lot of job opportunities between moving back to Minnesota, and the positions that had been opened were mostly FIED and health combined for both licenses, and since I was only licensed in physical education, I did miss a lot of opportunities within my district and other districts. I didn't even get interviews because my experience without a license didn't matter to people that I didn't know and hadn't worked with. So that's been kind of disappointing. And, of course, my husband's not in education. And so, you know, at the beginning of the year when I started this master's program, he said, so we're going to spend $15,000 this year for you to get your license, and you make $29,000 a year teaching half-time. I'm like, yeah. But I love teaching, and I'm good at it, and my students like me, and I love the school I'm at. So that's what we're doing as of right now. This is my third year on my variance, though, so I'm out of variances and needed to pursue a solution to the problem before I was able to meet with Ms. Stone. So that's my story. I appreciate you taking time to listen. Just as somebody that came here from somewhere else, I came into a really fortunate situation. I married and I have a couple little kids. My husband has a great job and health benefits. But had I moved here when I graduated college in Alaska, I would have left. There was no way I would have gotten a college degree and not been able to teach in what I thought I was qualified to teach. And I wouldn't have been able to get insurance and benefits. So if I hadn't moved elsewhere, I would have gotten out of education altogether. So I am a lucky candidate with a good, you know, meeting Ms. Doan last week was really exciting that it will work out for my long term, but I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kane. Ms. Rogers.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Madam Chair for allowing me. I'm Kirsten Cox Rogers, and I am honored to be a face of hundreds of teachers who are in our similar position. I moved to Minnesota 10 years ago from Utah with an active and valid teaching license in the following things: history, geography, English, reading, English language learner, and geography. I taught previous to moving to Minnesota for 12 years. During my 12-year teaching, I was named Teacher of the Year for my school. I received 2 Fulbright-sponsored awards and traveled to Russia and Japan accordingly. I was chairperson of numerous committees in the school, which shows, if you don't know how schools work, that you're taking a part. You are active. You are not just coming from your contract time, you are staying extra. And I did that throughout my career. Also during those 12 years is when I picked up the additional endorsements of reading, English language learning, and geography to improve my teaching, and because I like to learn. I'm a teacher, and I like to learn, and I like to teach. And I came here worried about getting a job. I came in mid-June. Teaching jobs are gone in March. And I turned in all my information to the Department of Education. And in mid-August, after I had gotten a job at Ridgefield Public Schools in History and English, I opened up my envelope, not one bit concerned, and all my license said was, you are qualified for a 2-year restricted teaching license. No explanation, nothing. At the bottom, there was a phone number. Obviously, I was rather upset and confused. You know, how could this be? I had taught. I am qualified. And I called, and I do take pity on whoever answered that call, which I'm sure was not getting enough pay for what they heard from me that day, but I proceeded to ask them, how can someone who, with my initial English minor, which it was a minor at a time, and then had gone back for that additional reading endorsement, so total that was over 40 credit hours of English reading, half of which were graduate level hours, how could I not be qualified for that? And that is the time I took the opportunity to explain how it works in Utah, which is you look at a list and you say, I need these classes to be considered qualified to teach this subject. So I said, how can I not do this? Look at all those classes. And the response they gave me was, it doesn't work like that in Minnesota. Turn your transcripts into a university. End of conversation. So I proceeded to turn in my transcripts to the U of M, not knowing any other place. I was new to the state. What I received back from them a few weeks later was a list of 18 credit hours in both social studies and communication, so a total of 36 additional hours to say I was technically qualified to do my job that I've been doing for 12 years and doing it very well. Including in that list was student teaching in both social studies and English language, which was, to me, insulting. It was demoralizing. This is a tough job. I didn't want to go back to school to do what I've already done. One of the requirements was to write a 3-day English lesson plan. And I just wanted to say, do you want to come to my class? Do you want to see what I've been doing for 12 years? After receiving that, that was it. I finished my year at Ridgefield. Because I was on that 1-year contract, I was dismissed, and then 2 days later they called me back and said, we'll give you another variance, because they had to put me initially on a variance because of all this licensing issue. And I said no. I said I'm done. And I love teaching. This was my job. This was my life. And I said no. I was getting married. We wanted to start a family. I was looking at going to school, having all new preps, which if you don't know in Teach World, that's a lot. I mean, that's all your lesson plans for the year. So getting married, hoping to start a family, and then having to go back to school basically full time for things I've already done. And I said no to teaching, and I left. And I substitute taught for a while. Luckily, I was in a position where I was married, so my husband could carry on. And just like Cindy said, if not, I would have left and gone somewhere where I could do my job and do it without having to pay thousands of dollars in addition. And one thing I would just like to say is it doesn't have to be like this. It isn't like this since I'm here. Is it doesn't have to be like this, and it's not like this in other states. The state of Utah, where I came from, and in no way and in many ways, I could go on and on about all their problems in education, which are great. But like I said, I could go online, and I did this summer as I got involved in the lawsuit just to, you know, back myself up a little bit. You can go online, type in your thing, and there it comes out, the list of requirements that you need to get a license in Utah in English, in social studies, whatever. Next to those lists is the coursework and the appropriate universities. One thing I do want to point out about the streamline thing is last summer I did finally decide it was time to go back to teaching, so I am currently enrolled, and it will cost me close to $9,000 to get my reading endorsement. And when I turned my information into the University of Mankato, what came back is you are cleared of all education classes. So when you're talking about set standards, how can one university say, I need this and this, another university say, you need this and this? It doesn't make sense. It's the opposite of set standards. It's confusing. It's unfair. And it, like I said, it doesn't have to be this way. Have it online. It's the internet. We can do this. And all these rules and regulations I see, great. Just put it online so people like me can look, and there it is. And have one person, one knowledgeable person there, who when we come in and I have effective writing and it says I need creative writing, I can call and ask, hey, is this going to count? And they can say yes, or it can say no. But here's the best and cheapest university to go to, teachers like this one. It's not hard. It shouldn't be this hard. And thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers and Ms. Kane. We really appreciate you sharing your personal experience with us today.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Daniel Sellers. Unless anyone else would like to come forward and testify, I think you're going to be our last testifier, and then we will get to questions. So I would just ask you again to be as brief as possible.
I will be. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Daniel Sellers, Executive Director of MNCAN, the Education Advocacy Nonprofit. And in consideration of time, I'll just throw out the first of only 1.5 pages of my notes and just say this. I wish I wasn't here. I've been working on this for a long time. I wish I didn't have to rope in my smarter and better-looking twin brother into this work. I wish that...
Thank you for solving that mystery.
I wish that I didn't have to hear the types of stories we just heard. I will just say, after hearing today's testimony, you have to ask yourself, is the board doing everything it can to faithfully implement the laws that have been passed? I would argue not. I would argue I'm not sure they're even doing everything they can to cooperate with the AG and their own legal representation, or even doing everything they can to prevent future litigation at the expense of taxpayers by just implementing the law that this body has passed. I'll just close with this. I sincerely appreciate the work that the board has done. And if the board's final adopted rules are clearly aligned with legislative language and intent, we will be cheering them on and we will be going away on this issue. But I want to be clear. If the appointed Board of Teaching ends up adopting rules that are in contradiction to legislation enacted by elected lawmakers, whether that contradiction is an obvious violation of the plain language or in violation of the spirit and intent of the law, we will challenge the rules by whatever means available to us until the actual practice of licensing out-of-state teachers matches the intent of the laws passed by this body. We have time and again seen the board make promises that progress is being made, only to hear further stories of that progress not actually being implemented. We've been reminded on a number of occasions, all of us here, that the Department of Education does not have the authority to provide oversight to the board and their actions. This body, the legislature, of course, doesn't really have that authority, and you all don't have the time either. You guys have lots of other things to do. So we have assumed a role of watching the actions of the board, primarily because we think it's important that somebody does. Minnesota teacher license candidates, our schools, and our students deserve to have a transparent process, and they deserve to have rules that align with the statute without additional protectionist barriers being enacted, barriers which, at this point, the draft rules which you all have seen, appear to make it much more challenging to get a license than is intended either in law or by the elected lawmakers who duly passed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Appreciate it. Oh, we do have one more testifier. Please come down. Welcome, and please just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know where the plural goes. I look to my English teacher colleague. Is it Madam's Chair or Madam Chairs? Anyway, my name is Cindy Christ. I represent the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I hadn't planned to say anything today, partly because you've all heard me address these issues before, and partly because my expectation was that you primarily wanted to get a Board of Teaching and discuss those updates with them. And I, too, will be very brief. I just want to say a few very brief things. First of all, MACD is 31 institutions committed to prepare the best possible teachers for Minnesota classrooms and classrooms elsewhere. We know teachers are moving both ways, working within the parameters established for us by legislation and the Board of Teaching. We have not had a chance as an organization to review and discuss the new rule language, which I believe was just released yesterday or today. So I'm impressed by the fact that MSBA has already sorted through it. But we're in the middle of a 3-day annual fall meeting, which is where most of our members are right now. So that's a little bit of an excuse for it. But they are very new. I don't think they were publicly released until yesterday or today. So we're looking forward to having an opportunity to do that. Just a couple of very brief comments related to things you've heard previously, and you've heard me say this before, but just a reminder. First, our system of licensure is a standards-based system. We define what teachers need to know and be able to do to be licensed in terms of standards, not courses. That's why our system does not work as easily as it does in Utah. I'm not saying that as the standards are better or standards are worse, but it's a reality. Our institutions can place standards in courses that fit the programs at their institution, so it's not going to be the same from one institution to another. And I fully recognize that makes things more challenging for the Department of Educator Licensing when they're sorting through. It makes it more challenging for candidates when they're sorting through and figuring out what's missing. If that's seen by everybody as a barrier, I believe the standards-based approach, I'm not sure about this, but I think it came as much from legislative interest as it did from the beliefs of the Board of Teaching going back 10, 15, 20 years. So if that's a problem, it needs to be changed as a system, but that should not be seen as a slam about how things are operating currently, because that is the system that we have. Also, just a reminder, and I know you know this, but the differences between the roles of the Board of Teaching and licensure. So the Board of Teaching does not tell candidates what they're missing in order to be licensed. So they should not be held accountable for problems that happened there. I'll just close by saying that we really appreciate what we've seen, especially in the last year or so, as a very open process created by the Board of Teaching. They, generally speaking, unless their time and agendas are tight, offer opportunities for all of us to speak. So frequently Daniel and I will both have a chance to get up and share ideas and concerns and be heard. I want to applaud the fact that they've recently added a study session time to their agenda, so after they finish their business, they're starting to dig more deeply into some other issues. I think Chair Erickson might not even realize that they hadn't been doing that, because when she was on the board, they not only had those kinds of discussions, they frequently convened stakeholders across the state to really dig into issues. And I think, you know, 6, 8 years ago, we'd really lost that with the Board of Teaching. So they're getting back to those deeper, richer discussions and bringing people back into them. And then also they've reinstated standards and rules, which provides an opportunity for them to hear again a little more deeply from stakeholders who have interests in issues facing them and on which they may not personally and professionally have a lot of expertise. So standards and rules doesn't make decisions, but they can help inform the discussion, bring issues forward, and then take those issues back to their members. So thank you for the opportunity to share those few brief comments.
Thank you. All right. Questions from committee members? Representative Quam, and before we get to that, I just wanted to note for members, and there's been discussion, and last testifier mentioned it, that you know, the Board of Teaching has certain responsibilities, the Department of Licensure has other responsibilities. We did invite the Department Director of Licensure to be there. I understand that there's a new director there. He was not able to be with us today. That's unfortunate. I'm very disappointed that he wasn't able to make himself available today for this hearing. I would consider it extremely important for that individual to be here. So I just wanted to make that known for the committee that this person was invited. The department was asked to provide him. So, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in order for brevity, some additional information may be useful on this topic. One being, how many variances and for what deficiencies have been granted the current year and then any previous years we can get. That might help us understand. I would assume there'd be more variances when the process wasn't functioning as effectively, but it would give us a better picture. And then also if we can find out what required programs, because one of the testifiers mentioned that some of the special ed programs aren't offered in the state. So can we find out what licensure areas are no longer offered in the state, which means makes it pretty silly to say, well, you have to take it inside Minnesota in order to do it if you can't take it in Minnesota. So those could be something that could be gained and dispersed to the members. And then I'm not sure who could give us an idea. This process appears to be somewhat slower than what I would anticipate. And what are the implications of if this process isn't completed in a timely fashion? Because I already have superintendents complaining that there are positions that are not going filled because either there are no candidates or the very few candidates that apply, they would not hire. And so if we can have an idea of the time frame as it aligns with the hiring and interviewing practices required by our education schedule. And I'm not sure if that would be something outside or if there, you think there's a testifier that could address that.
Ms. Stone and Mr. Billingham has come back forward, so I'll let them go ahead and take a crack at those questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, there are materials on the Board of Teaching's website right now that would help with some of the things that you've addressed, primarily special permissions that are granted across the state, variances that have had to be granted in particular areas separated out even in terms of geography or by district. So that information is readily available, but we'll also send it along, make sure that it gets to you. In addition, there is a document on both the Board of Teaching's website as well as MDE's educator licensing that would outline all the available approved programs in the state, those which are at an undergraduate level or a graduate level. And I think that would provide a lot of the information that you referenced just now, but we will make sure that all of those things get sent your way.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Just to that point, Ms. Stone, in regard to the variances, as I have visited with school personnel, particularly superintendents and board members, they're asking that you consider lifting that July as the date for applying for a variance. They have needs during this shortage time before the July date, and it's really, really difficult for them to make staffing decisions when they have to wait to apply after July 1 for the variance. So if you would just consider that, I wanted to make that appeal. Thank you.
Absolutely. Representative Quam? Thank you. Representative Moran?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I don't really know how. Well, I'm happy when I hear lawyers come before us to talk about the different biases that's going on within the Board of Teaching, and become a little bit unsettling when, you know, we look at the last 5 years of the Board of Teaching and see that there are no decisive decisions that have been made based on the applications that become that comes before them, based on the information that I've heard from Mr. Watkins and Mr. Seller. And so before us, we have some requests from the Board of Teaching, who we also heard that in the testimony from the testifiers that the Board of Teaching have not been making decisions based on the laws that have come from this body. They have not followed through on the laws. And they have created their own interpretations of what that is, which becomes a little bit, you know, unsettling for me. And so we have some comments, and maybe we can have some Mr. Watkins or Mr. Seller come before us to kind of like bring some clarity as they're asking for some amendments in rules governing the insurance of renewal and the fidelity of the teaching license. Can you kind of like help me understand what that means as we have testified that they have not really followed the law as it has been enacted, but now they want to amend it to create a process?
Well, if Mr. I could Rackers. Speak to that, thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative. It is most unfortunate, I assure you. We are very disappointed. If I wasn't clear earlier, both Mr. Sellers and I are acting pro bono, and our firms get very disappointed when we spend hundreds of thousands of hours of resources on pro bono cases, and they are very cautious in making sure we only act in areas where we can have a positive effect. And this is one of those issues that we think is crucial. So in terms of where they're not following the laws, one of the really crucial issues for us was the Board of Teaching, nor the MDE, would never, and they testified, Ms. Dolan testified under oath, that she would never tell a candidate what they were missing for licensure or what was required to get licensure. And she testified under oath that that was not possible for her to do. Apparently, it's not anybody's job, because these teachers spend over a decade trying to figure out who to get, how to get there. And the fact that the Board of Teaching tells constantly, so for those who couldn't hear, there were comments, it's not the Board of Teaching's job. I absolutely reject that. First of all, the statute's abundantly clear. The Board of Teaching is the one who's meant to do this. The Board of Teaching is the one who's meant to create streamlined procedures. 122.23 subdivision 1, the bottom half of that paragraph is abundantly clear. The Board of Teaching shall create streamlined procedures. Subdivision 2, the Board of Teaching shall grant licenses. 122A.21 sub 2, the Board of Teaching shall accept applications for licensure via portfolio. It is absolutely deplorable that nobody can tell my clients after 10 years of applying for licensure, what are the requirements for licensure? What do I need to do to get licensed in Minnesota? Apparently, there's not a single person able to tell them that. 10 years. I just got a Colorado license to practice law. I've never read the Colorado Constitution. I have no idea what it says. I got a license. It took me about 3 weeks to practice law. 10 years, my teachers cannot even figure out what's required for licensure. The court, so my problem is the Board of Teaching tells these people, go talk to a school. We can't tell you. The Department of Education can't tell you. No one can tell you. We recommend you talk to a private school, sometimes a private for-profit institution. That private for-profit institution will tell you what courses you need. We won't review that decision. We won't help you with that decision. We won't tell you anything about that decision. We will simply certify it and accept it as the only fact there is. This is a huge problem that we've been litigating over for years. It's just unacceptable for the Board of Teaching to delegate its decision-making authority to schools. That's not what they do. Schools are not there to decide who's entitled to a license and who's not. There are so many issues like this that I could list off and go through. Now, the laws are so clear on this. Licensure via portfolio is perhaps the clearest, best example. That is an absolute imperative from the legislature that applicants have a right to demonstrate their qualifications, experience, and training. These are people who are coming from other means, who are coming from other areas. I have clients with PhDs from MIT who are told, you need to go take basic math skills. That's absurd. And no one can tell them why. You heard from two teachers who were told they had to pay money to take student teaching after each having more than a decade of teaching experience. And I want to clarify, both Ms. Rogers and Ms. Kane have been issued teacher's licenses. However, it was a court order that got them the final meeting with the Board of Teaching. And it wasn't until a court order that they got that meeting. And within less than an hour, both of them were all of a sudden issued a license. Why does it take a lawsuit, three meetings with the judge, a court order, requirement that they issued letters that were deficient, and so on and so on and so on? We finally hear. There are so many areas where the board just absolutely refuses to follow law, and I cannot begin to understand it. Why they need more time? Why in 5 years do we not have a single streamlined procedure that makes it easier for anybody to get a teaching license? That's unimaginable, and it's something I cannot comprehend, frankly. Somewhere's falling down.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Representative Moran.
Can I request that the members from the Board of Teaching come and maybe respond and get to help me with some clarity about why you have not been able to, and maybe you have, streamline a process that creates a path, and also respond to the portfolio piece.
Sure. Thank
Ms.
you,
Ms. Dunn.
Representative Moran, you know, I think the frustrating thing for me at this point, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of the board, I'm guessing that they're as frustrated as I am, but I'll speak for myself. There are elements of truth to what you're hearing. There are also elements of dishonesty. And, you know, I think that we're going to choose to try those things in the court of law, which is where they're taking place right now.
You know, the audience will remain silent. Thank you. Ms. Stone.
There's a breakdown in communication. And there's a breakdown in communication between the two agencies that are responsible for this process. There's a breakdown in communication between higher ed institutions and the board. There's a breakdown in communication between teachers and the board, between teachers and the Department of Education. And quite frankly, we have a system that is structured long before probably most of us sitting in this room ever had anything to do with a thought about teacher licensing. The system is not structured to be easy to navigate, and there are easy fixes that are available and at our disposal. Right now, the board is the subject, as you know, of a legislative audit, and I have no doubt that there will be recommended changes for the process as it exists. I think that there are members who have been at the board table for 4 years. There are staff members who have been sitting behind those desks for over 15 years who are just as frustrated as the teachers that you see sitting before you. There is a system breakdown, and, you know, I think that if you talked with the two teachers who were here today, you would also find out that they asked me the question, well, how would I, if I didn't hire an attorney, how would I get to you? And you know what my answer was? My answer was, you would call me. You would email me. But the fact is, you didn't know, it was not clear to you who you were supposed to be talking to. What was clear to you was that there was a number on your license for you to call, and what wasn't clear to you is that you were calling and getting a customer service representative who is not trained to make the kind of decisions that some of those questions were being posed to them were about. We all have work to do, and I, you know, it just gets really frustrating coming back to the table, talking about the vilification of a group of people who work very hard to make sure that our kids get the best.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moran.
So I would like to point out, as you know, we have one of the worst achievement gaps in the country. And a big part of that is that our schools are failing our kids. Right, and I know there's 60,000, I believe there's like 60,000 teachers in the state of Minnesota. I believe 594 are teachers of color, right? And that's important, that's not the only component to having better educational outcomes for kids of color, but it's a big piece that we need to find and create a path that we can get a bigger pool in that instance. And so I hear about the complications and there's not a path, and I believe it is the responsibility of the Board of Teachers to create a more streamlined process. What do you need to make that happen so that we are getting more teachers in the classroom?
Ms. Dunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Moran. You know, I think I'm not sure where we crossed the line when the discussion about teacher licensure became connected to the only reason why we can't have teachers of color in our classrooms in Minnesota is because of the licensure process. I think that is one factor, and I would not sit here and tell you otherwise. But I think there are a whole host of other factors. We have not talked about why we don't have more programs at two-year colleges that feed into four-year programs. We have not talked about, you know, what can we do? What are the tests that we give teachers measuring? And how are they acting in good ways to ensure quality? And how are they perhaps taking us a step back and really acting as barriers? There are a whole host of factors that go into this conversation. And as I said, this is not a Minnesota problem. This is a nationwide problem. We are one microcosm of that discussion, and we do need to be attending to the conversation. And I believe that the Board of Teaching and its members have. What do we need to make that happen? Certainly a step that you took last year in talking about teacher loan forgiveness is a step in the right direction. What do we need to increase the number of pathways that are available to people? We also need higher ed institutions or educational nonprofits or districts who are resourced to be able to train their teachers. We need people who are interested in offering those pathways to step forward. The board cannot create those and then turn around and be the approving body for them. So if that is the case, that you want the board to be responsible for that, then the board also can't be in that sort of dual approval position.
I have one last question, Madam Chair.
Representative.
On your presentation for the Minnesota licensure eligibility, you said in order for out-of-state teacher candidates to be eligible for a Minnesota license, the teacher preparation program must be a licensure field for which Minnesota has license and rules. What do that mean?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Moran. So I'll give you an example that worked the other way. Minnesota licenses teachers for autism spectrum disorder, as you heard from earlier testimony. There are a number of states, in fact most, in the country that don't license for that area. Therefore, when they take that license to another state, they would encounter similar problems to the ones we're discussing today. In a state where there is a K-12 or a K-6 special education license, and they bring very specific training, they may not necessarily qualify for the license in the other state, just based on the subject area and the expectations that are aligned to it.
Does that, Madam Chair, create a barrier to getting more teachers from out of state into our classroom.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran, yes, I believe it can in some cases, but the standards that are set for teacher licensure and the areas that we believe are important for teachers to be licensed in within Minnesota are a part of the discussions you all have on an annual basis and the Board of Teaching has, as well as the profession. So there are some barriers that we've chosen to put there. I guess I wouldn't call them barriers, but there are some things that we've decided are very specialized and that we feel are important pieces to our education system.
Madam Chair, will you be creating a streamlined process?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran, I think the problem is no one has defined what a streamlined process is. I mean, really, are we talking about a streamlined application process? So we're talking about a better way to get information from candidates into the system for a decision to be made? Because if so, you're talking to the wrong entity. This is the wrong entity at the table. Are we talking about fewer requirements for teacher licensure? Then that is the right entity, and yes, we should be having those conversations. But for the life of me, regardless of the changes that we've made, either in policy or that MDE has made in practice, we keep hearing, you're not doing anything. There isn't a streamlined procedure. So maybe another thing that you could do is define for us, what is that streamlined procedure? What is it that we are looking for to change to make this a better process?
So Madam Chair, with all the changes we have made, it doesn't make any difference is what I'm hearing. We have not created a process.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that to be true. I have presented to this body and many others work that the board has done to change policy. I don't believe that statement to be true, and I'm not sure at what point we cross the line where the community and stakeholders stop communicating with one another and listen to one major argument. Yes, I believe there are issues. Yes, I believe it is our responsibility to clean them up. No, I don't believe we have been sitting still since 2011.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I have Representative Seltzer, and then followed by Representative Bennett, Representative Mariani. So we're going to obviously go a bit after three. If anyone else has a question, I will put you on the list, and we will try to wrap by 3:20, 3:30 if we can. Okay. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, both of you, for your service. And as a former board member, I know that serving on a board can be very challenging. I'm glad you reinstated study sessions. That I was served on a school board for 8 years, and that was just part of it, the way it was back in the day, I guess, for the Board of Teaching. So, but I do just have a couple of questions, and I am confused. And I want to hone it down. We've talked about some really big issues that need to be talked about, but I want to get down to what the Board of Teaching, kind of does according to what you have said. And so here are my questions. My first question is, what process do you have in place to monitor your rules, to go back and make sure that they align with the law? I got a document here, someone sent me with, various ways in which the proposed rules really don't align with the law. So tell me, and as legislators, we can't be doing that. So I'm going to your rules, I'm going to the statute. That's not our job. So what do you do to make sure that the rules that you have, and some of the proposed rules don't look like they line up exactly with the law? How do you, in the end, go back and make sure you're aligned with our law?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Seltzer, thank you. I think that there is also something that is suffering in translation right now, which is when you are a group of people that is working on writing rule, there has to be a means of putting a stake in the ground and a place to start a discussion. The draft that you have in front of you today that says October 9th working draft on it was a draft that was written based on what the requirements were for Minnesota programs and put them into the context of what would it look like if we required the same thing for every teacher in the state of Minnesota. That was a working draft that was prepared for the board to have a work session on at their last meeting on October 9th. Due to discipline matters that went very long into the afternoon, that work session was delayed. Because we didn't want to wait any longer for a draft, we actually moved that forward to start an official draft with the revisor's office. The board at their November 13th meeting has a work session scheduled for them to go over all the expectations that are there. Part of the reason some of those things that are there that may not look like they comply with the statute is because, as has been acknowledged in this body, right now there are many, many, many contradictions between statute and rule all over. And so what we're trying to do is nail down what is the expectation and have an actual discussion about how those decisions got made. What is our expectation for Minnesota teachers? We have very, very high, rigorous expectations of our candidates trained in Minnesota, and which ones do we actually believe are required to be identified within another candidate's background when they come to Minnesota in order to work on the achievement gap? I'm just going to give a quick example of the reading standards that we no longer look for, as well as training for working with non-native English speakers. We have really good reasons for identifying those kinds of things and expecting our teachers to be trained well in those areas. We have, again, let me be the 100th person to say it, one of the biggest achievement gaps in the nation. It makes sense to me, and just me at this moment apparently, that we ask all of our teachers to be trained in those areas, not just teachers who are trained in Minnesota institutions. We are streamlining the process by saying some have to follow some of the rules and others get to follow others. We have set up the sort of dichotomy that Ms. Dietrich was talking about earlier. We have already set up unequal expectations, and that working draft was meant only to say, what is it? What is it that we expect of all teachers in Minnesota?
Oh, Ms. Madam Chair.
Representative Seltzer.
So, and thank you for that, and I understand, and thank you for the explanation of this working draft. That's helpful. But I'm just wondering, so I'm just looking for how in the end do you make sure that your rules are aligned with our law? Is it working with the Revisor's Office? I just want to know the process, because a lot has been said here today and it doesn't seem like all the rules are aligning with the laws.
Ms. Dell.
Madam Chair, part of the testimony that you're hearing are from applicants who did not apply in the last year or two or since 2011. I have offered my personal apologies to those candidates, which are worth little to nothing at this point in the game, but we've made that attempt. Certainly, a rulemaking process is meant to involve stakeholders so that we can all come to the table and discuss what's important, not just important to the Board of Teaching, but what's important to all the stakeholder groups, what's important to our administrators, to our teachers' union, to our higher ed institutions, what do we as a state believe all teachers need. And throughout that process, we are looking for alignment of those expectations, alignment of the statute, and alignment of the rule.
Okay, thank you. And then thank you. And I just had one more question. It seems like there's a failure, as you said, to communicate. So as we move forward, I mean, I think this streamlining, and this is before my time, this directive to streamline regulations has been in place since 2011. And then, you know, you asked a question, which is a good one, what does streamlining mean? Well, what is the mechanism for communicating with the lawmakers who make the laws, saying we need further definition instead of having it kind of come to this point?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Seltzer, I can only speak to my experience, which is very brief. And to that point, there is one executive director who is responsible for being the outreach to all of you when our members, who are classroom teachers, are in the classroom with kids on a daily basis. So we have tried some new methods of reaching out to involve you as lawmakers in board retreats, to be present when possible, to communicate those ideas. But without intentional activity on behalf of more than one individual, it's hard for all of you to hear from us on a frequent basis. The other thing I'd like to go back to is something that was mentioned earlier, which is the Board of Teaching does meet on a monthly basis and also has a public comment period at each and every meeting. And I can't remember the last time that anyone other than MNCAN or MACD sat at that table as a stakeholder to give information to the Board of Teaching. So yes, it is their responsibility to reach out, but yes, it is also their responsibility to be able to listen and engage stakeholders and hear from them.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for that. And I would just, you know, suggest, I understand you can't really sit down and have a conversation with each one of us, but it might be a good idea, you know, as you work with our leadership, our chairs, to perhaps set up some type of a system with them, the people that head up our education committees. That might be a helpful thing to do. And again, I just want to end by saying I know how difficult it can be to serve on a board, and you know, and I thank the people that go and serve on the board. You certainly are doing it for all the right reasons. Hopefully we can kind of tighten up some of our procedures and move forward together. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the board, everybody who has said something today. It's really clear from hearing from teachers, from the Board of Teaching, from administrators, schools, whatever, we've got a lot of work to do to work together, and that's what needs to happen to make this system more transparent, more fair, and work for teachers. But I would like to ask a question, and I don't know who wants to take a crack at it. The root issue that we're dealing with is we don't have enough teachers in Minnesota. And 35 years ago when I started teaching, it was the opposite. I had a hard time finding a teaching job. There was a glut of teachers. So something has changed, obviously, and I'm sure there's a number of causes, but as a teacher, I was always taught when students are struggling, and so we're struggling as a state right now, looking for teachers, I was taught to drill down to what are the root cause or the root causes. And I'm wondering if anybody wants to take a crack at that here. Just, I recently, and I know it's a big subject, but recently coming out of teaching, I know the frustrations, and some of the administrators here alluded to it, the amount of paperwork that is put onto teachers, especially special ed teachers, but even it's moving into regular ed, is horrendous. And as myself, who loved teaching, and 10 years ago I would have said I would never retire from teaching when I could, but about 5 years ago I said, yep, I probably will. And what changed is I wanted to teach, and I couldn't. And we have to get down to this as a state and let teachers teach, because that's part of the problem. But I'd like to know if anybody here would like to take a crack at that. Why are teachers leaving earlier than they normally would? And why are we not having teachers come in? Is it because we're over-regulating and over-paperworking, if that's a word, or is there something else? Because I don't think that anything's going to happen until we get down to the root cause. A little bit out here with the teacher licensing, that's got to be dealt with. That's part of it. But anybody want to comment on that?
So I'll open it, and I know either Ms. Doan or Mr. Bellingham is a teacher. If you want to comment on that, anyone else here who would like to offer, if you have any thoughts on that, please feel free to come down.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Bellingham.
I could address this as a 34-year veteran and classroom teacher. And in talking to students who either are going into education or thinking about it, the barriers are, from what I've heard, are this. One, the pay structure. Two, is the amount of testing and cost that these students will incur while going through a teacher preparation program. Three, the attack on public education in this state and across the nation. Attack on unions, attack on pension funds. Because the kids, I'll call them kids because I'm an old guy, the kids are saying, if I'm going to go into this as a career of 25 to 30 years, what's in it for me down the end? Where do I go? Where am I at? John, how can I be like you at the end of your career? Where am I at? Will it be there or not? And I have to do this and this and this. I have to, the first 3 years of my life coming into teaching, I'm in limbo because I can be let go for any reason. I don't have to have a reason. I can be let go by a district. At the same time, teacher evaluation, which I supported. I was on the state teacher evaluation committee. Supported. I support continuing contract teachers being evaluated. Okay? But three times the first 3 years, and then, you know, constant teaching to the test, testing. My last year of teaching, 6 weeks, kids, we virtually calculated 6 weeks, kids were not in direct instruction of the teacher rather than prepping for it, a standardized test. Talk about, as an attorney said, unheard of, embarrassed, disgusting. As an educator, that is to me, for a snapshot of what is a day. How do we get teachers of color? When I came on the board in 2011, the MTLEs were right prevalent prominent. Most of the cut scores were set at plus one standard deviation. When you looked at the data, particularly in math and sciences, the data showed that our candidates of color really struggled. So this board has put those cut scores back to standard-based, panel-based recommendation. I haven't seen last year's data, but are we gaining? I'm not sure. But again, I think all of these factors figure in. You know, on the board, we deal with testing all the time. So there's where I come from as someone who was in the field, what can we do? And believe me, recruitment and retainment is huge for the board, but it's not one entity. It takes a village here. It takes the legislature. It takes MDE. It's going to take us. It's going to take a lot to get our teaching population up.
Thank you. And I'll allow one more person who wants to come down just because I want to make sure we get through the questions here and answers before 3:30. Anyone else want to? Okay. All right. So, Representative Bennett? Thank you. Appreciate your question. A very good one. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Chairs. And I do want to acknowledge both of your leadership in setting this hearing up. It's terribly important. I also know that Representative Aronson has put in a lot of her own personal time sticking with this issue and being present at the Board of Teaching. So I want to acknowledge that leadership. I think this is a vitally important conversation that we're having. I'm not going to ask the question. I'm just going to say a couple things, very, very quickly. One is that I hope that Representative Barrett's question is one that we can spend some time, even now, between now and the beginning of that session, diving deep. I think that would be a very rich conversation for us to have with a broad group of stakeholders, and so hopefully that could happen. I also want to say that I think there are some other root causes here. And part of the root causes, I think, has to do with some new and different expectations that we have of teachers from even 10 years ago, certainly from 20 years ago. We heard some of that from Mr. Prater today, with some ever-sophisticated knowledge and experience around what are the particular type of skills that we need to have present in our classrooms. And then, of course, is the issue of teachers of color. That percentage, as you all know, hasn't changed in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, we had 4% of our teaching corps were teacher of color, and 2015, it's still 4%. In 1990, when I first ran for office, 1 out of 10 kids enrolled at our public schools were kids of color. Now it's closer to 1 in 3. So there's been this big shift that's been happening demographically with our student base, but has not been mirrored at all by licensed teachers in our classrooms. And by the way, Madam Chair, and I'll forward this to both of you, the organization that I'm involved with, the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, just within the last month issued a policy brief on this issue. We spent close to a year studying it along with folks over at the Humphrey Institute. And so we've laid out one framework at which to understand the phenomenon around teachers of color and some of the challenges that we continue to face, even in the face of programs that we've had in this state. And some of the elements that Ms. Doan elemented are highlighted are in that. So let me just stop by saying I welcome this conversation. I hope that we can continue to have it. I suspect that part of what we're going to have to talk about isn't just what's happening within the existing system, but frankly, I think we ought to be questioning whether or not the design that we have in our state, with that bifurcation between the Department of Ed and the Board of Teaching for one issue, let alone some of the other issues like the one that Ms. Chris put on the table for us, I would hope that we dig into that as well, because I suspect that we can certainly pound on both of those departments and others, but you can't squeeze stuff out of a poor design. And I'm not saying there is a poor design, but we ought to ask that question of ourselves, because ultimately that we're the only ones that can do something about that. So anyway, thank you both for today's hearing.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Very thoughtful comments, as always. We appreciate that. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering if Ms. Dietrich can come down. And while she's coming down, what I've been observing is that the public sector broadly, so not just education, but the public sector seems to be having increasing difficulties in hiring candidates to fill whatever positions there are. We're seeing this particularly now in law enforcement, where roughly the same number of people are being licensed in law enforcement. But when particularly lower-paying suburban districts go out to try to hire a new cop, they're not getting the number of candidates and perhaps not the quality of candidates that they did before. We got, I don't know, 60 months of increasing job growth in the country, you know, longest run of private sector job growth since World War II, I believe. So as Representative Bennett indicated, because I think she and I are thinking along some similar lines, the underlying problem here is teacher shortage. And the licensure issues that we're looking at are a piece of that, but we're not going to solve all of the teacher shortage issues in Minnesota on trying to bring in out-of-state teachers. We need to deal with it ourselves. So my question is, as I think about what are the challenges there, if Ms. Dietrich, if you could talk about what have school boards done to increase initial teacher salaries to be more attractive to candidates, particularly when we rank, I think it's fifth in the nation now in the amount of student debt that folks are graduating from college with. What are they doing to make their benefit packages more attractive? My understanding is millennials have different benefit package ideas than perhaps you and I did at that same age. What are you doing to strengthen and improve induction programs so that when I walk in that first day as a newly minted and licensed teacher, there's somebody to hold my hand because I'm going to need that, and so are the kids I teach. And then particularly, what are school boards doing to strengthen retention efforts? Because we know that an awful lot of folks walk in that first day and don't walk in that third year or their fourth year or the fifth year, and that's particularly an issue with teachers of color not being retained in the profession. So since you folks are the ones who can move those needles, what are school boards doing?
Ms. Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's quite a loaded question, and I think you're asking me to be God. But I could handle it. As you recall, Representative Dabney, last year, the Minnesota School Boards Association authored a bill that would have provided $300 per pupil on the formula each year of the biennium. And it was Ms. Kelleher who actually came down to the table in Ways and Means and said, we need $850 million on general education in order to make up for past inequities in funding. So we continue to be advocates for money on the formula, and we will continue to be. We acknowledge the fact that the formula has not kept up with inflation, and we are behind inflation, and that is, in our estimation, a problem that needs to always be in front of the legislature. So with that, there are some other things that we have done. MSBA specifically is starting a four-point strategic plan. Point number one on that is increasing diversity in our school boards and helping train school board members in diversity in order to help them deal with the diversity in, first of all, the teaching staff and in the changing demographics in the state. And we hope to be, we have had somebody from Mankato come and speak to MSBA staff in St. Peter for the last two staff meetings for 2 hours each. Excellent person from Mankato, and has challenged us in ways that we are very anxious to work with the legislature on, and how we can continue to increase the diversity in the teaching profession. If you will recall, this kind of scenario a year ago, MSBA actually had a bill that would we do believe that there are some barriers in the current system that can be eliminated that would encourage more kids, more students to go into the teaching profession. But as you pointed out, millennials are not going to go into a profession that is basically the longer you stay, the more pay you get, the more you get educated. Millennials want to be paid for what they are worth. And if they can perform in the classroom, they want to be paid that. And they want to be acknowledged for that. And so we, MSBA, along with the superintendents, actually had a bill last year, Representative Keel carried it for us, that that said your performance in the classroom matters. And that can help you work towards your teaching license if you are unable to overcome some of the barriers that you have not been able to overcome to get your teaching license. So those are just a couple of the things that we have been working on and that we will continue to. I think it is, it just actually just breaks my heart when I look at the Minneapolis School District hiring 400 teachers a year. Minnesota has a 10% attrition rate right now, and Minneapolis hires about 400 teachers a year, and we ought to be able to be out there recruiting and competing with other states for teachers of color so that our students see are reflected in the teaching staff. And so we are committed to this, and we will continue to work on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was a partial answer, but when God gives you even a partial answer.
You take what you get. Thank you, Representative Gabby. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Fenton, and you're the last person I have on my list.
Thank you. My question is for Ms. Stone or Mr. Bellingham. Can you tell me? I'll give them time to come up.
All right. I think they can listen while they're walking down.
Do you have the data on how many applicants from out of state you currently have in the process?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, that information is held within the application systems at MDE. So that is information that we could get for you. But again, that's a function of educator licensing.
Okay, that would be good information to have concerning the rulemaking process and whatnot. And you discussed that you look to continue on in the litigation that you've been in. Can you tell me to what cost are you up to in litigation costs for the Board of Teaching?
Ms. Down.
Madam Chair, I can't tell you what the cost is that for our litigation costs right now. I could tell you what the costs to morale are at this point, but I also think, you know, to the extent that we are able to share documentation publicly, we certainly will do that. I can't think of a better way to say it than there are a number of miscommunications in the process. Our last attempt at having these conversations went very well with those candidates who came in to meet with us. The other thing that you're hearing is that, you know, the board never responded until all of a sudden there's a lawsuit on the line, and then all of a sudden licenses are issued. The board never knows who a licensure applicant is until there's an appeal of a determination. The board does not process applications for licensure. The board sets policy for how that application process is determined.
Okay. And then there's one technical question here with the interstate agreement. Am I reading correctly that Mississippi is part of the central states, or should that be Missouri?
It should be Missouri.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Creasy, follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. When an appeal comes up and there's a decision to go to litigation, how is that decision made? I'm just curious who makes that and how that all happens.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, at this point, the case that we're in right now is not the normal procedure. Our case in Ramsey County District Court is not something we would normally see in a district court. When there's a contested case hearing, whether it be for a licensure matter or a discipline matter, those normally happen through the Office of Administrative Hearings. This is not taking the normal path. I would say that the board at that point has an opportunity with its assistance from the Attorney General's office to provide information on why the determination was made and to receive a ruling from an administrative law judge. In this particular case, we're not operating within the state's administrative system.
Representative Creasy.
Okay, I think I followed that. So in a situation where an appeal comes and you get served, I'm just trying to figure out what we're defending here. Is the board defending the process, or are we defending decisions that have been made? Is the Attorney General looking at this? I'm trying to figure out who's all involved and who says, you know what, this is something we absolutely should fight. And maybe, you know, I'm just curious.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Kresha. In a normal contested case hearing, the Board of Teaching, through its representatives, sometimes that would be an ethics specialist, sometimes it would be the executive director, work with the Attorney General's office to defend why a determination was made. An administrative law judge then doesn't make a ruling on where that goes. They make a ruling as to whether the board acted appropriately or whether the board acted outside of its means, we'll just say. Within the case that we're going through currently, many of the candidates that we're speaking to now through a court of law never had the opportunity, never took advantage of the opportunity, never made us at the board aware of their interests until coming through a litigation process. When we get down to the last conversation of saying, you can have a one-year license in the state of Minnesota until you've completed testing, the board does not have the jurisdiction to say, it's okay, you don't have to do the test, you did that somewhere else. That's something that is in your hands because that's in statute. If you want the board to have that authority, then that's something that you would have to change. But right now, when it comes to that sort of a thing, the board can't, we can't budge. That's what's in statute.
All right. Representative Kresha.
Thank you.
All right. I apologize, Representative Peterson. Your name was on my list, and I thought I was done, but so please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, you talked about there's been some communication breakdowns and things of that nature with the Minnesota Department of Education and the Board of Teaching. And would the process go more smoothly for licensure if Minnesota Department of Education and Board of Teaching were consolidated or somehow put more together?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that's a bit of a loaded question. Do I think that the process would work better if resources and authority were aligned appropriately? Yes. I don't know what that consolidation means or what that looks like, but right now you have a board that's responsible for policy and permissions or deviating from a licensure. You have a Department of Education's Division of Educator Licensing, which processes applications. If you're asking the board to fix something that is happening on the licensing application determination end of the process, it's not within our authority, nor do we have budgetary control to be able to put more resources into fixing something. So do I think the process would be more smooth if those things were aligned? Absolutely.
And just a quick follow-up, Ms. Stone, and we've had some discussion about this back and forth, and again, I'll express my extreme disappointment that someone from licensing is not here. But, I mean, in your opinion, who or what entity is ultimately responsible for licensure of teachers in Minnesota?
Madam Chair, I believe that the board's policies are responsible for the way licensing determinations are made. I believe that when someone appeals a licensing determination, that it is the board's responsibility to investigate, to look into that, to make a ruling as to whether that was the appropriate determination. Right now, the determinations that are made on each and every individual license application are not made within the board's staff.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, did you have any final?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to everyone who's been here today to enlighten us and to help us try to understand this issue. But my last question has to do with program approval of the alternative pathways to licensure, and I know the University of Minnesota is the only program right now. To what extent are you marketing that and trying to get more program approvals in other institutions, because that is a pathway for many who are already degreed, who I think we could entice or invite into a program. So please comment on that.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think at this point, so your first question was, to what extent are you marketing that? Well, the board itself cannot really be in the position of marketing programs based on its approval responsibilities. However, we can be in the business, if you will, of going out, of doing outreach to school districts, to higher ed institutions, and helping them think differently about what options are out there for addressing the current needs. I think to the extent that we're talking about alternatives that were approved under 122A 245, we only have TFA in the state of Minnesota at this point. To the extent that we have higher ed-based alternatives, that is a booming factor in Minnesota. We have a number of already approved alternative programs that operate within higher education, and even though the board gets to hear a lot about those as they're coming through, new programs are being introduced, you probably don't hear a lot about those publicly, which is probably both the responsibility of the institutions at large and we as board staff and board members to be in touch with you and help you understand the opportunities that are there.
And Madam Chair, and to that extent, is it the institutions that need to notify us as to how many candidates they have in those alternative programs within their institutions, or is it your responsibility, or how do we get that data?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, that is data that we can certainly pull together for you.
We'd appreciate that.
Thank you. All right. I do have to end the hearing now. Many of us have other things we need to appointments that we have to keep, and that Ms. Stone, before I gavel out the hearing, I would ask and first if you would provide to the committee, there was a question about litigation costs. Could you provide that to the committee, please? And then also, I know other members may have had questions we didn't get to. If we can submit additional questions to you in writing, would that be acceptable and you'd be able to respond to the committee members?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. We do appreciate that. And again, I appreciate you and Mr. Bellingham and all of our testifiers today. This is an incredibly important issue. This is one we will continue to work on. You know, some of these are very difficult issues and jurisdictional boundaries and other things that we may need to sort out. And so I want to offer to you, and I think on behalf of Chair Erickson, I feel comfortable saying, you know, if there's questions about interpretation of legislative intent in statute, certainly things that were in the 2015 law on that, we would welcome your questions and be happy to offer, you know, clarifications to you. And we could do that publicly in a hearing and whatever is helpful to you in this process. But, you know, on behalf of the schools and the students and teachers who are currently licensed, those that wish to be licensed, and the great need that we have, this is an urgent matter, and we do expect the board to act with all due expediency on this issue and promulgating rules. And they can be difficult things to do. We put a deadline in the statute on purpose because we expect this to be done. And so with that, I will say thank you to everyone who was here. If you have questions, committee members, please forward them. We'll make sure that we send them to Ms. Stone and make sure that everyone receives the questions and the responses. And with that, the hearing is adjourned.